Welcome to another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. On today's episode of Stands and Fits, we will recap the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, talk a little bit about the winners and losers of the NCAA tournament first weekend, maybe argue about some golf. I've had people coming at me about golf all week, and I'm sure we'll go off on a couple other different tangents as well, as we usually do. What's up, man?
Not a whole lot. Ready to podcast.
Yeah. I got to pull up our rundown here.
You haven't tallied the updated Cyclone Fanatic staff picks, have you?
I have not. My bracket's in a...
I feel like
my bracket's in a bad spot.
I feel like that's probably zapped your motivation for that a little bit.
No, it's not necessarily that. Like I'm not biased toward. Mm-hmm. I'll admit that I did poorly, but
the Arizona pick kind of did you in.
Yeah, most everyone did poorly after the way the first weekend transpired.
Yeah,
it could not have been more insane. I would say
first 16 over a one ever.
Is this the point when I should tell everybody that I warned them?
Yes. Might as well right now.
I told you guys. Jarius Lyles.
You did.
Everybody laughed at me.
He had a good game against Virginia. Then couldn't quite pull through against Kansas State. But
yeah, no, they could. That was one of the worst basketball games I think I've ever watched in my life.
Oh, yeah. It was right up there with Syracuse and whoever they played.
Michigan State.
That was a bad game, too.
Yeah, equally bad. The first day was really fun. Second day was pretty fun, but mostly was just capped by the craziness at the end of the night. Mm-hmm. Saturday was pretty much the same until the Michigan game, kind of, or I guess the Loyola too. Those two games kind of back to back really capped the night. And then Sunday was boring. I only watched one of the Sunday games.
I only watched one as well. But Nevada came back, or Nevada,
not Nevada,
not Nevada. That's the one in Iowa.
Yeah. Not the Nevada Cubs.
No, Nevada,
the Wolfpack. They did come back, a rather stunning comeback against a team that doesn't usually get comeback on like that.
Yep.
But the thing that did concern me about Cincinnati was their offense, and that did turn out to be the problem in that game.
Before the tournament even began, I looked at Nevada.
Nevada.
Looked at Nevada, and honestly, their KenPom stats looked a lot like past Iowa State teams. And you remember Iowa State going into Cincinnati and beating them a couple years ago. So I figured, hey, they could beat Cincinnati.
So you had them in the Sweet 16?
I did.
How many Sweet 16 teams did you get right then?
I think I got... Nah, I'd have to look. But I didn't miss as many as some people did.
I got only two on one side of the bracket, and then I got all of them on the
other
one.
Well, it's like the bracket...
Well, except for Michigan State, I guess.
The Villanova and Kansas, like everyone did fine on, just because those are pretty run-of-the-mill.
Yeah.
But the other two looked bad for everyone.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know how anyone could have anticipated... obviously, no one is picking... realistically picking the 16 over one.
No.
If you pick 16 over one,
it's more of a joke than anything.
Right. You're just, it's your other bracket.
Yeah.
Like, it's that kind of situation. And the fact that they actually won the game, I mean, even in the second half, I think UMBC was up 10 and you're like, there's no way that they're going to win this
Virginia's
game.
Virginia's going to go on a run and it's going to be the same old story.
Right. And I turned it on because I wasn't watching the game. I turned it on when they were up like 11 with 11 minutes left or something like that.
Mm.
And at that point, you're just like, all right, what wins Virginia? They're going to hit a three, get it back to single digits. Like, it's just going to take a couple possessions, you know? And all of a sudden, UMBC is just knocking down everything that they are getting. They're getting to the rim at ease. And that's kind of what I tweeted about on Saturday was it was pretty shocking to see a team that won 30 games in the ACC completely deviate from the thing that had made them so good this entire season.
Yeah. UMBC was doing so well at taking Virginia like out of their usual slow it down. You know, they're getting out and run a little bit.
Right. And well, and it wasn't even as much that as it was, you know, Virginia's defense is built to play percentages. You know, you play the percentage with the three-pointer you want. You're going to let them shoot the threes and you feel like eventually it'll all kind of just flesh itself out, you know? And they came out hot. Virginia all of a sudden kind of panicked, and they're flying out on these shooters when that's so different from what they normally do, whereas usually it's like, all right, well, we'll let you keep shooting, but you're not going to get in the lane. But then later in the game, UMBC kept hitting shots. Virginia panics, starts flying out, And then, oh yeah, UMBC has guys who are way quicker than anybody else on Virginia's team. Mm. And they're driving right past them and getting to the rim. All of a sudden, everybody's trying to overcorrect. And then there's wide open threes or there's wide open looks at the rim. And yeah. It was just like basket after basket. And that's how you lose 74-54.
Yeah. If you're a Virginia fan, you kind of have to wonder about having, you know, your sixth man of the year, ACC, your best defender in your team out. Like how much that would have influenced that game.
Right.
At the same time, I don't think it's, you know, 20 points worth.
No, certainly not 20 points worth. Like, the fact that the game went the way that it did is absolutely shocking.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that the Arizona game against Buffalo went was pretty shocking as well.
Yeah.
And to have those two games cap off nights on back-to-back days is pretty insane.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this Thursday was, I would say Thursday was as good an opening day of the NCAA tournament as we've seen in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you get the Loyola game that ends on a buzzer beater. Gonzaga ended on a buzzer beater, more or less. Mm-hmm. I mean, a final shot near the end. The Oklahoma game goes to overtime. I mean, it was one game after another was really, really good. And there were some bad ones sprinkled in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the Arizona game to kind of put the cherry on top of it.
Yeah. Besides all the typical, like, you know, the upsets, I guess the one thing that kind of surprised me is that I did think that South Dakota State was going to play Ohio State much better than they did.
Yeah, and I mean, it was still a good game, mm-hmm. you know, but it just didn't seem like they were on the top of their game.
Yeah.
You know, because I know that SDSU is a better team than what I think they showed on.
Agreed.
On Thursday.
I tweeted about him, but I think their one guard.
Jenkins.
Jenkins, yeah. He was having an off night, and he kind of kept on shooting, and it kind of killed him at times, I thought.
Yeah, I don't know what his final line was, but I know at one point he was 2-for-10.
Yeah.
When we were tweeting
and I'm
about
sure,
that.
I'm sure, like, throughout the year, he's been their guy who, you know, he makes stuff happen, like, besides Mike Dom, obviously.
Right.
But at the same time, if you're having one of those nights, you know, give it to someone else, too.
Right, yeah. There's just some days you just have to realize, I don't have it today.
Yeah.
You know? So now we move into the Sweet 16. There's obviously some teams that nobody could have ever possibly expected to be there. All of a sudden, Kentucky is the favorite in the South region,
yep.
which is not quite as ridiculous. Like if someone had told me before the, before the first round, it's like, no, Kentucky's gonna be playing the best out of all these teams. I've been like, damn, Virginia must have really squeaked by, and you know, something like that.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, you'd be like, they'll probably lose to Cincinnati or something in the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
But now you're faced with the possibility of them playing 9-seed Kansas State and then
Loyola or Nevada.
Or Nevada. Yeah.
I got it right that time.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. So they could potentially go to the Final Four without beating a single team that's seeded higher than 6th mm-hmm. in their region.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, their path to the Final Four looked the hardest out of arguably every 5-seed in the tournament before
right.
all these upsets happened.
Right. Well, and that's what's crazy is it's like, how, you know, we were talking so much about Arizona. It's like, damn, they got such this tough draw. Virginia got such a tough draw.
Yeah.
And then they got beat by the teams that nobody was even talking about being a tough draw.
Exactly.
I don't get it. I mean, the tournament is such a crapshoot, dude.
Yeah.
Like, at this point, there's no science to it. It's just like, we should just all enjoy it, you know?
Yeah. So then my question to you would be, knowing what the Sweet 16 looks like, what's your revised Final Four?
Well, I think you got to go with Kentucky out of the South. I mean, mm-hmm. they're playing really, really well.
Yep.
And they can't shoot the three at all. But the length that they have on defense, their ability to get to the rim, they've got guys who are strong finishers. I mean, that's a team that I think you have to feel pretty confident going into this weekend that they're going to be the team to come out of the South region. I still stand by my Villanova pick.
Yep, that's pretty solid.
On the opposite side. I still stand by my Duke pick on the opposite side as well. And then the other one is, who is it? Florida State.
Gonzaga.
Michigan.
And
Texas A&M.
Yep. Texas A&M's
playing well, man.
They look so good against North Carolina.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think that if the front court players for Texas A&M play the way that they did against North Carolina, it's hard to roll against them.
Yeah.
But, crap, man. I I guess I'd take Michigan. I don't know.
I haven't watched like one Michigan game all year. Like, I don't know. Like, with the way Texas Tech played, I would assume that if they beat up so badly on North Carolina, they could also do the same to Michigan.
Yeah.
Right?
Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, did I say something else?
Yeah, sorry. Texas Tech.
All right, I'm really out of it today.
No, you're good. So I kind of am too. This is my third podcast of the day.
Wonderful.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like they're a little bit better equipped to handle that. I mean, North Carolina played five guards at portions of this season. And if you have two guys that are as good as Robert Williams and Tyler Davis, not going to work.
Yeah.
You know, clearly, as we saw on whatever that was, Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah.
But I mean, Mo Wagner is a good player. I think that they can probably handle that a little bit better than North Carolina can. But if they play that well, Texas A&M has a lot of talent, you know. I mean, Robert Williams is a lottery pick type guy, and nobody even talks about him, you know.
I remember thinking before the season that Texas A&M was going to be a lot better than they actually turned out to be. So, like, seeing them play as well as they did the other night, it's like they're playing to their potential now.
I should have saved George H.W. Bush for Hots.
Yeah.
Because he picked Texas A&M to win the national title.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, and at the time, I took it. And
you like laughed.
Well, I shared the link to the tweet with Chris, and I was like, I think Billy Kennedy and Steve Prohm might have taken George H.W. Bush hostage and told him to pick Texas A&M and roll with Coach Prohm's old boss.
Well, who's laughing now, man?
Yeah, exactly. Now apparently Bush 40 is the beautiful mind of basketball.
Yeah,
everybody laughed at him.
Yeah, he knows more than we do, apparently.
He knows something. So, I don't know. Who are you picking out of that one?
Well, I pick Gonzaga.
Yeah, okay.
So,
You rolled with them originally, right?
Yeah, I have them in the national title game, so I'm rolling with them.
Man, I mean, I think that you got to feel a lot better about that pick than you did a week ago.
I do.
You know?
Yeah.
You told me that before, and I was like, I don't know about that one.
Well, they barely squeaked by their first round game, too. That was coming down to the wire.
Yeah, UNC Greensboro.
Yeah, that's right. Greensboro looked like they were going to beat him for a second, but pulled it out.
Yeah, Zach Norvell is a nice player. Killian Tilly, he's a good player. They don't bring back like hardly anybody off that. Jonathan Williams, like that's like the only guy they bring back from the Perkins. Basically, yeah. Other than that, it's like a completely new team. So that's why I didn't really.
I really like Mark Few as a coach.
It's
part of the reason why I picked him. So,
have they like done the Villanova thing now where Villanova made it once and then all of a sudden the floodgates open? They just make it a bunch of times.
I think
like,
so.
They're gonna make that run. You
like,
know,
it, well, if. I'm still rooting for Duke because I also picked them, obviously, to go to the national title game. But it would not surprise me at all to see a Gonzaga-Villanova clash of the teams that could never get past Sweet 16 before. So
that would be crazy. I mean, Florida State's been – how many times have people been telling us Florida State was going to be really good, and then they're never good? Now they're in the Sweet 16 with, like, one of the teams that I know the absolute least about that they've ever had.
Yeah, exactly, because the last few years they had, like, Dwayne Bacon and
Jonathan Isaac.
Malik Beasley.
Yeah.
Guys like those, and they don't have that this year, but they're so good still.
I don't get it, man. Like, the whole tournament is just – Clemson, like, their coach was going to get fired. Brad Brownell was firmly on the hot seat, you know. People, I think, wanted him fired last year. Now, all of a sudden, he's in the Sweet 16. Who beat Michigan State? Oh, Syracuse. Like, every year, we don't think Syracuse should get in. Then somehow they're in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. Went to the Final Four 2 years ago, three years ago. I don't know, dude. Like, I don't even know what you can analyze. We look at this team's the best team. They've been the best team all year. But once you get into that one game setting, you don't know what somebody else's motivation levels are like or anything like that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're getting beat by 20 like North Carolina did.
Yeah. And I think regarding Syracuse, I think it's pretty safe to say that teams like in the ACC have kind of gotten used to playing against their zone.
Yeah.
But once they get to the tournament, it's just you can see it on film, but you're not equipped and ready to play until you actually get out there on the floor.
See, and I was listening to a podcast today where somebody made an interesting point about how the place where you want to get the ball to beat the zone, like into the middle at that free throw line.
Yep.
There's been such a de-emphasis on shooting the mid-range.
Mm.
Nobody ever throws the ball there anymore.
Yep.
Or when you do throw the ball there, there's nobody that is like really adept at making that shot like it used to be.
Jeff Beverly, man.
Right, exactly. Michigan State, why didn't you guys take Jeff Beverly?
It would have been a win-win for both parties.
Yeah, exactly. It was something like that. It would have been something. But now, if you're not hitting your threes and you don't have anybody who can hit from the mid-range, then all of a sudden you're getting ran off the court by that zone.
Yep.
Which Michigan State, at the end of the game, some of those shots that they got were atrocious. The last two shots that Miles Bridges took, I was like, what the hell is this guy doing?
Yeah.
You know? And I think that this was supposed to be like Tom Izzo's one of his like most talented teams. Coming back with Miles Bridges and you got Jaren Jackson, like all these guys that are going to be lottery picks in the NBA. And they get an early exit after, you know, what their reputation is as a program. This has to have been one of his worst coaching jobs in all of his time as a head coach.
I think he's got a little bit of other things on his mind too.
Season, and that's all like,
but yeah,
auxiliary
from things. a strictly coaching standpoint. Yeah, it's a little bit disappointing.
Like Miles Bridges is not a three, and he played the three the entire season for Michigan State. And yeah. I think that at the end of the day, that like came back to bite them. You know, it was one of those things where it's like he'll be a three in the NBA, so we need to not hurt his draft stock. When in reality, if he just had played the four, because that's where he was best to play, suited to play at the college level.
Yeah,
they probably would have been a better team.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you're making the sacrifice for the team to come back and play another year, I would think that he'd be willing to make the sacrifice for the team to play the four.
Maybe
if that's what it came down to, that was going to give them the best chance to have a lot of success. So yeah. I don't know if that was a Miles Bridges thing. I don't know if that was a Tom Izzo thing.
Well, like outside of Jaren Jackson, what do they have for guards? Like I haven't watched much Michigan State either this year.
Well, they have that Tum-Tum Nairn. Okay. He's a guard. I think the point guard.
Anyways, Jaren Jackson's
like a five though, isn't he?
Is he? Oh, I'm completely off on that.
I think so.
My bad. But anyways, that kind of leads into my point. Like, if they're not very deep on guards, then maybe that's why he was forced to put Bridges at the three.
I don't know who their guards are. I don't know much about Michigan State. I just knew Miles Bridges. I knew Jaren Jackson. Okay. Jaren Jackson's kind of a freak. So,
okay.
And I know that they shouldn't have lost to Syracuse based on the way that these two teams played the entire season.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like I said, it's hard to even analyze any of this stuff because there's so many different factors that go into play.
Yeah.
Like, I picked Loyola to win in round one because I really liked their offense, but I had no idea that same offense was going to give Tennessee as many fits as it did. I think that there was room to see that, but to, like, logically be like, yeah, Loyola is going to go to the Sweet 16. I would not have predicted that, you know?
Well, you definitely wouldn't have picked UMBC over Virginia.
At this point, I wouldn't even be shocked if Loyola is in the Final Four.
No. I mean, with as well as they had played, they could make it there.
Well, and what's even crazy is I think they only got like two seniors.
Yeah. And I would see them, if they played Kentucky in the Elite Eight, then I would see them struggling with Kentucky's length more than they have against these first couple games. But at the same time, when you're hitting shots from outside with Clayton Custer and whatnot, then you're doing well.
See, and that's where it comes back to the thing that I was talking about all last week about the way they run their offense, where they're all spaced out and the way they move the ball.
Yep.
Like, you can beat length with that, you know. It's a lot – it's pretty hard to dribble through those guys. But if you can make a move, I think that's the way that Loyola has been able to win some of these games. I expect it to be Loyola and Kentucky in the Elite Eight.
Do you? Do you think Loyola is going to beat Nevada?
I do. Yeah.
Sounds good.
I don't know. We'll see.
I think that Nevada is going to be a little more balanced, and I think they're going to be able to pull it off against Loyola.
I'm just concerned about Nevada because of the playing six guys thing. That's concerning.
I mean, the nice part is about this upcoming game, you know, they've got like 5 days rest at this time.
Yeah. I don't know. I like Loyola. They seem like a team of destiny. You hit two buzzer beaters in the first game, the first two games, and I think that you've got some... Sister Jean, her prayers are being answered.
You've got some good juju on your side.
Yeah, for sure. So you're going to ride with – you picked Duke to win the title, right?
Yep.
All right, so you're going to ride with that still then?
Yep, sticking with them.
Yep, I'm riding with that too. I think that's the most logical pick. I think if you're going on pure logic, Villanova or Duke are the two that I think you've got to look at and be like, yeah, those are the two best teams in the country.
Agreed.
All right, we'll be right back here on Stands and Fits, do some hot and not and a couple other things. When we come back, Cyclone and Fanatic Podcast Network.
Hey guys, we'll get you back to the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast here in a few minutes. I want to tell you a little bit about a story. I was hanging out with Dr. Michael Kruger from Ames Eye Clinic in Des Moines Eye Care a couple weeks ago. We had lunch. And I told Dr. Kruger, hey man, I hadn't been to the eye doctor since I was like a kid. And I thought back to it. I mean, it's been like at least 25 years since I've gone to the eye doctor because my eyes seem fine. Like I can see. It's not like, you know, I have walk around squinting all the time, but I have headaches a lot. You know, I stare at a screen like 12 hours a day. That can't be good for me. So here's what we're going to do. Coming up in March, later on this month, I'm going to go get my eyes checked and I'm going to show you guys why it's important to do, how easy it is. And also that you got a cool Cyclone fan in Dr. Kruger who you can go and hang out with. Nothing scary about it. They accept many medical and vision insurance plans at the Ames Eye Clinic in Des Moines Eye Care. Got those two convenient locations, DesMoinesEyeCare.com, AmesEyeClinic.com. Same week appointments. I'll let you guys know how it goes. I could be in glasses the next time you see me. It'll be worth it, though. Go give them a shot. Ames Eye Clinic, Des Moines Eye Care, Dr. Kruger. Now back to the podcast.
Welcome back to Stands and Fits. Thanks, Chris, for those quick words. If you are looking for analysis on Iowa State spring football, this is not the podcast for you this week.
You probably already figured that out, though.
Yeah. Listen to CFTV Live that I did with Jeff Woody on Tuesday. He talked about the five positions he's most interested in going into spring football. Did a nice job. Always a good listen if you can handle Jeff and his tangents. We didn't go on any tangents today. I didn't allow it. We only talked about spring football the entire time.
I find that hard to believe.
No, it's well, okay. We went on a short tangent at the beginning, but then it was not near as long as some of the other ones that we've been on here in the last several weeks. So yeah, check that out. I'll also pump the podcast that I did with Tyrese Halliburton. Crap, I was going to bring that up in Hot and Not. All right, well, my hot this week is Tyrese Halliburton. Led his team to a state title, named the Gatorade Player of the Week of the Year in the state of Wisconsin 2 weeks ago. And now he is the premier guest on season two of On the Trail. So there we go. Tyrese Halliburton continues to rake in the honors.
It's exciting. I you know, people have kind of said that he's a candidate to redshirt for next year just because he's a little bit more slight than a guy like Zion Griffin or Talon Horton Tucker. But at the same time, could you see him getting some PT his freshman year?
Maybe he could, man. I mean, he surprised me. He's a lot better than I think a lot of people thought he was.
Yeah.
I mean, to be... There, you know, there's a kid that's going to Kentucky. There's a kid that Jordan McCabe that's going to West Virginia, up there in Wisconsin. He beat out both of those guys to be the player of the year.
It's kind of like a Monte Morris situation with Derek Walton.
Kinda.
So we'll see.
I don't know how that'll all shake out. If he can come out and have a really good summer, I wouldn't be at all surprised. He's probably got to put on some weight. Got to get stronger.
Yeah.
If he's gonna do that, but he's definitely got a lot of skill, man. And the interview that I did with him is really good. That's a smart kid. I mean, he's got a good head on his shoulders for sure.
And that's the thing. If you're smart and you're dedicated, then, I mean, he could pack on 20 pounds this summer. We never know.
Right. Yeah. Who knows? I didn't ask him if he does, like, track or anything. I can't imagine he does. But
yeah.
I'm sure that will be how he spends a lot of his coming months before he arrives on campus in Ames the first week of June. So what do you got for your hot? My other hot was Jarius Lyles. So
we kind of covered that already.
Yeah, we already talked about UMBC.
All right, so my hot this week, Wingstop in Ames. So this has been on Twitter everywhere, but
free advertising for Seneca.
Free advertising. Seneca Wallace's Ames location of Wingstop had a soft open to the public, or it had a soft open to select Iowa State staff and athletes today, and their public soft open is tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 12 noon. So unfortunately for me, it's going to be another craving that I have to turn down over my lunch break.
Are you still on your eat well diet?
Yes, but I've given in a few times.
You've given in a few times?
But like on my day-to-day, like I still like my regular meals are very healthy, but you know, I indulge every once in a while.
Okay. That's fair.
But I saw this challenge that Chris Williams and Ben Bruns are going to do, the 60-day fat burning challenge apparently, or something like that.
Yeah, nobody should bet on Chris in that.
Like he's pointed out, Ben's like a high caliber D1 athlete and he's going up against him. It's going to be pretty tough for Chris to win.
Yeah. Chris is not going to win. That's just the facts of the matter. I'm sorry, Chris. I hate to put you down like that. He was not happy when I said that on the radio a little bit ago, that I didn't think that he was going to win. My money is all out on Ben Bruns, for sure.
That's a safe pick, I'd say.
For sure. My not this week, I got two of them, actually. First of all, the Bruce Weber sucks crowd. Bruce Weber's going to Sweet 16, man.
Yeah.
Is outside of Bill Self, Bruce Weber might be the most accomplished coach. Okay, I guess maybe Lon Kruger. It goes Bill Self, Lon Kruger, Bruce Weber. The three most accomplished coaches in the Big 12.
I mean, I know.
Only Shaka Smart's been to as many Final Four. Is the only other one who's been to Final Four.
I was going
to
say Shaka Smart, but his recent years have kind of put him down a peg or two.
Jamie Dixon, I guess, could be in the conversation, but he's never made deep tournament runs like Bruce Weber does.
That's true. I mean, it's like even like
Bruce Weber's won the Big 12. Nobody else in this league can say that.
Too bad Tubby Smith's not here anymore. He has some accolades to back it up.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Try and shoot down Bruce Weber. I won't allow it. Elite.
Dude.
Elite.
I mean, I'll give him credit. They beat UMBC without Dean Wade, and I guess they beat their
and beat Creighton.
And beat Creighton without Dean Wade, which is impressive, mm-hmm. I'll admit. But again, they had to get to the Sweet 16, they played an 8 and a 16. So at the same time, is it really that good of a coaching job?
The Bruce Weber sucks crowd can suck it, is all I will say.
You can't argue with W's, man. I'll give you that.
Can't argue with W's.
All right.
I'm being like only like 65% serious.
I know.
I'll say. Okay.
By the way, like Bruce Weber like has some of the best reaction GIFs of all the like the Big 12 coaches.
Oh yeah, I saved one on my phone. Over the weekend I created a file in my pictures, coach reaction GIFs.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I have a Ron Hunter one that I've sent to my friends.
Is that the
times.
One him falling off his
No, there was like a call against. No, I think they like got called for a shot clock violation or something. Oh. And he just makes like a like this face, and then he like puts his hips on
it. So stern.
Hands on his hips, yeah. And he just like turns around, and it's just it looks like he's throwing a fit.
I gotcha.
And it was really funny.
Yeah, Bruce Weber is more of the your mouth's like on the floor, like you're astounded at something. You're so surprised.
He's really good at acting both surprised and
dumbfounded.
And yeah, completely dumbfounded, so confused. At once. I don't know. Never seen anybody else who has that talent.
That contributes to why everyone thinks he's not a great coach, because he looks like he's like
a goofy guy.
Yeah, a goofy, doesn't really know what's going on kind of character.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he has a little bit of coaching DNA.
He did appear in a national championship game.
Yeah, with Bill Self's recruits. So, anyways.
You might be right.
Yeah.
I'll concede that point.
All right, I'll slide in here between both of your knots. I'm not gonna make the same joke I made the other podcast.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So my knot this week, I found an article. I believe it was on Sporting News. It was just about the Celtics Big Three.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, Ray Allen has a book coming out. In his book, he dives into the situation like surrounding their locker room, basically, uh-huh. And he just goes into depth about how guys like Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce were obviously like they're very driven, motivated dudes.
Yeah.
Very competitive. But at the same time, he kind of like really dogs on Rajon Rondo, who was apparently completely selfish.
Uh-huh.
And I think I saw that Rondo came out and refuted a lot of the things that Ray Allen said on Twitter.
Okay.
But at the same time, I'm more inclined to believe the Ray Allen side of things. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably be more inclined to believe the Ray Allen side of things, too. All of those guys have been incredibly petty
in the
years since he left the Celtics to go to the Heat.
And the thing about Ray Allen is he's come out and said before that even though Kevin Garnett's like very particular
uh-huh.
about the way of things, like he wouldn't want to play with anyone else but Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
But he won't say the same thing about Rajon Rondo. So I just found it very interesting.
I think that in the years since all of this has happened, we've very easily figured out that, pardon my French, Rajon Rondo is a complete dickhead.
Oh, like
that,
absolutely.
I think that has become incredibly clear in the years since the Big Three.
Because all the stops that he's had after Boston, he's had some kind of locker room issue.
Yeah, nobody ever likes him.
No.
Or either everybody likes him, but it's like perceived. There's like a couple people who don't like him that change the entire perception of things.
Yeah.
I've heard some stories about him with the Bulls that are interesting. To say the least.
Are these shareable on the podcast?
Maybe in like 5 years they will be.
Okay.
Today, probably not.
Okay.
But yeah, like I said, I'll say that there's some interesting stories that exist out there about Rajon Rondo.
And it's just, the whole looking back on the Celtics like dynasty.
Yeah.
Back in the, you know, the late 2000s, it was pretty interesting because that was like the first like big team up that had led to all these other team ups.
Right.
So it was like the birth of modern day NBA almost.
Oh yeah, definitely. That was like the first group of guys that we like, they just like teamed up. Like, yeah, this is our squad, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. My other knot is Tiger Woods back?
No, he's not back.
He's not back?
No.
His fifth place finish at the Arnold Palmer Invitational shows that he's not back.
My hot last, or let's see, it was my not last week. It was Tiger Woods haters. I think that Tiger Woods is not back, but at the same time, he's not back.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, he's back to playing competitive.
You're playing like some mental gymnastics handle.
Back to playing competitive golf, but at the same time, he's not the Tiger Woods of the 2000s.
Yeah. Okay.
Because if you say Tiger Woods is back, I expect Tiger Woods' backness,
yeah,
to be him.
His backness
to being winning basically every tournament every, yeah, weekend.
Okay.
And that's not Tiger now.
No, that definitely isn't Tiger now. All right, I just wanted to get an update on the is Tiger back thing. We had a golf discussion last week. We have a planned golf discussion weeks from now.
That should be, well, I think that's like either next week or the week after that.
It's probably the week after the Final Four.
So
it's usually how
that'll be fun.
How that plays out.
I'm pretty sure the Masters is fairly early this year.
Is it?
Yeah.
So okay.
We'll see.
I don't keep up on the golf schedule. But no. We are gonna do Would You Rather. I'm thinking of these questions almost completely off the top of my head, to be completely honest with you. But
right.
I think that this first one that I have is pretty good. Would you rather be the first team or no kid? Would you rather be the first seed in the NCAA tournament and lose to a 16 seed, or lose by 20 points to in like the 8-9 game?
So. I need some clarification here. So am I exactly what happened to Virginia? Like I am the first ever number one seed?
No, like now moving forward.
Now moving forward.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So you're not like, this is not like precedent setting, you know?
Okay. I'd rather lose in the 8-9 game, I think. Because I think even though you wouldn't be the first number one seed to lose anymore, you would still join a very exclusive list. And
yeah.
It would be super embarrassing.
That's fair. I figured that that's probably how the answer would flesh out. But as we were talking about the NCAA tournament, that kind of came to my mind.
Yeah.
And I was like all over the place today. I didn't have time to think of questions.
I will have to admit that I am so relieved that Iowa State was not the first one seed to lose to a 16 seed. Like,
yeah,
I think
that's
a
very Iowa State thing to have happened.
That was a very real fear that I think a lot of fans probably like had in the deep bowels of their mind, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think everybody felt like if Iowa State ever was a number one overall seed,
like
they would be the ones to have it happen to them.
There would have been a lot of Iowa State fans who would have bet on the 16 seed if that were to ever happen.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because you know, then it becomes a kind of a win-win.
A win-win.
Not really a win,
but not really. Yeah,
yeah,
that would have been really terrible. But yeah, I'm glad that it won't be Iowa State to be the first team to ever lose to a 16. Man, I still can't believe that happened.
Yeah. And the fact that it was just the number one overall number one seed, too.
Right.
So.
Right. All right, man. I don't have another question.
That's all right.
We kind of went through the motions with this one. Like I said, I did two other podcasts today. I was on Fanatics.
Pod fatigue.
I'm talked out.
You are. Know?
I will often do these podcasts, and then I won't talk for like an hour.
I don't blame you at all.
So, all right. Thanks, man, for coming in.
Yep.
Thanks to everybody for listening. Hopefully... This was hopefully you made it through. It wasn't a marathon of a podcast. This was a little bit more of a sprint, but we were sprinting very slowly.
Yep. Enjoy the Sweet 16 and Elite 8, everyone.
We will talk to you guys again next week.